This is a duplicate tape of Dr. Alfred Lee's interview from an original 90 minutes tape to a 60 minute tape.
California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. January 16, 1980, and second interview with Dr. Alfred Lee at his residence in Los Angeles, conducted by Beverly Chen. Dr. Lee, can you tell me a little bit about your personal experiences while growing up in Los Angeles? Where did you live and what sort of friends did you have? What kind of social activities did you engage in when you were growing up?
All right. We were born here in Los Angeles, California, and most of my association, we were one of the few families that lived amongst the white folks most of our lives.
You rented a house or you?
Rented.
Ah.
It wasn't until later on, and since times have changed here in the United States, that we, in fact, we continually moved around Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Eventually we moved to our present location about 20 years ago, or 23 or 4 years ago. And our children, that is my wife and I, Holly and I, all our children were educated here also in Southern California, with the exception of my youngest daughter, who is now married. Mm-hmm. She went to Berkeley, and then from Berkeley she spent a year in England,
right.
And then came back here to UCLA to finish up and get her master's degree, master's degree in paleontology.
When you went to the 16th Street Elementary School, was it mostly a white school?
Yes, because there were not too many Orientals in this area at that time. We were one of the first families to move away from the Oriental section.
The 16th Street School is no longer?
It's no longer.
Existence now?
No. It became Frank Wiggins Trade School, and now it's still a trade school.
Where exactly is it located?
The 16th and Grand.
Ah, I see. And so you played with white kids?
Most of the time, although there was a couple of Chicano kids.
That you also played with?
They played with.
Uh-huh. Did you find that they accepted you as an equal?
Oh, yes. Children don't discriminate. It's only us adults who discriminate.
So you had no experiences of, you've had no experiences of discrimination all the way up throughout your life, I mean, up to college?
No, I wouldn't say that because as the higher you got in your education, the more discriminatory they got, people became.
Uh-huh. What was the first instance of discrimination?
Well, I can't say that because how do you say discrimination when your children or if somebody, you can get mad at somebody, children get mad, and then 5 minutes later they're putting their arms around each other just like they knew each other all their life. I mean, there was no serious incident of discrimination, although I didn't create any. It all depends on a person's attitude, whether you cause discrimination or not, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Because when you, let's say you push your attitude over to somebody else, it's the same as religion. And when you try to force your religion, your belief on somebody else, you're going to find resentment. Force your political views on somebody and you find resentment.
Correct.
So therefore, and as far as mingling with our own Chinese kids, from the time I was about I would say about eight, nine years old, our parents, at least my father, suggested that we learn Chinese because our face would never allow us to become an American. All right. When people see you, they don't say you're American. They ask you right away, are you Oriental or are you Chinese or Japanese?
I see. Did you go to a Chinese school?
Yes.
In
Los Angeles. After day school, we went to Chinese school at night.
For how many hours?
Oh, we went, I would say about three hours.
Every day?
Every day, and then half day on Saturdays. We used to go from 9 to 12 or 9 to 4. I forgot exactly which now. But I know we went to Chinese schools on Saturday afternoons.
Which Chinese school was it?
Well, it's no longer here now. But it was a private school in Chinatown.
Oh, I see. How many kids were there?
Oh, I'd say there was about 30, 40 kids.
And were they all in the same age group or?
No, different age brackets. Because we have, same as in American school, you have grade levels in which you taught it. And especially ourselves, since we didn't live in Chinatown and we weren't able to speak as fluently as the rest, they gave us some consideration because we spoke mostly English.
How many years did you spend there?
Oh, I'd say about 5 years, 5 or 6 years.
So would you say you would be able to write some Chinese?
No, I don't write too much and I don't read too much, but I can speak a little colloquially.
I see.
I could carry a conversation with you in Chinese.
In say yep.
In say yep, Cantonese.
Not Samyup, you know.
Well, Samyup is the same thing. We don't make that distinguishing different over here. If you've lived in this part of the world long enough, your Chinese becomes colloquial Chinese. It doesn't become the strict Chinese that you would have in a village in China.
Oh, I see.
It's the same thing. The people on the West Coast, the people in the South, the people in the East talk with a different inflection of the voice because the locality and the majority of people come from what section of the country.
Could you give me your addresses where you have lived, the specific addresses since you were born?
1454 or 1454, but
yeah.
It was on Palm Street in Los Angeles. That's right near the California Lutheran Hospital.
In which neighborhood now?
We're talking about, I guess it's called Central Los Angeles now.
Oh, I see. That was when you were born.
That's where I was born.
And your father was practicing as an herbalist at that time?
Well, a dental technician.
Oh, excuse me.
That's all right.
I confused something. Oh, okay. And he was how long had he been practicing in Los Angeles before you were born? You were born in 1910. Right?
I was born in 1910. He's been in Los Angeles since about 1906 or 07, right after the San Francisco earthquake.
Right. He was living in San Francisco,
up until approximately that time, until after the earthquake.
Then he decided after the earthquake he
Well,
like
everybody
San Francisco.
Is like, I mean, when you lose everything at home, you have to start someplace else.
So did he have a practice, did he work as a dental technician up
anything,
there?
Anything beyond that, how would I know if you weren't even born yet, my dear girl?
Oh, I thought you might have asked him or he might have told
you. Well, we've talked about different things, just like you and your parents will talk about certain things. But when you ask for specific incidents, when do you first start asking your parents questions? At what age did you start to think for yourself or even think about these things?
Okay, after the Palm Street, how long were you at Palm Street?
Well, I lived there, I think it was about till 1927 when I was going to LA High. And then we moved out to 4226 Denker Avenue. And then I lived there until I married.
Where's Denker Avenue?
It's in the southwest part of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. And while you were living on Palm Street and Denker Avenue, those places were mostly white?
Well, not necessarily white. They were ethnic neighborhood, I think is the word you want here.
I see. I thought you said you mostly lived in white.
Well, it was considered white. Ethnic, Chicano, there was no such thing as a Chicano then. You were a Mexican.
Right, so...
And yet you can be a citizen just the same as I am.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider yourself Chinese right now?
Mm-hmm.
Where were you born?
China.
You were born in China? Yeah. You don't speak with an accent, that's why I accuse you. Well, I was surprised because we had gone to China a couple of years ago and I run into several girls over there in the shops when we purchased things and bought things, and they spoke very good English.
Oh, yes.
Since World War II, I think English has been a predominant language around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would definitely say so. So you, after the Denker Avenue, how long were you at Denker Avenue?
I would say about 10 or 12 years. You're asking me a question. I never expected these kind of questions to come up in my life again, as people were checking my past.
Yeah, and you played with, what kind of kids were around your neighborhood? Mexican, Chinese,
well, then,
whites, or
little
blacks?
Little by little, it integrated.
Uh-huh.
But when we first moved over there, it was mostly whites.
Uh-huh.
But we did have several Chinese families that lived near us.
Mm-hmm. Were your personal friends, i.e. the little friends you invited home,
yeah.
While you were living on Palm Street or Denker Avenue, were they of any particular ethnic group?
On Palm Street, they were mostly Caucasians.
Mm-hmm.
When I say Caucasians, because at that time I never checked into them to find out whether they're native born, American born, or whether they're acquired citizenship. As far as LaSalle Avenue is concerned.
LaSalle Avenue?
Well, did I say LaSalle or Denker?
Denker, yeah.
Well, because I lived at home then. Then after we got married, then I moved over a block. We bought a place a block away from my parents.
Oh, and that was LaSalle.
That was LaSalle. That's 4305 LaSalle.
And that was, which year was that? About 2 years after you graduated?
No, I graduated almost 3 years before I got married.
Oh, so it would be about
35, someplace along.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Then, how long were you at LaSalle?
Well, I'd say about...
Before you moved over here?
See, Sharon's 26 now. I lived there about 10 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately. Now, these are all approximate figures.
Right, yeah. Okay.
You're asking me this is something I didn't expect to be specific about in detail.
No problem. Okay. So, I presume you feel completely at ease in the company of Americans, i.e. white Americans?
Yes.
As in Chinese?
Yes.
Chinese?
Yes.
Do you make a difference? Do you differentiate between Chinese that are born here and the Chinese that come from China?
I differentiate in the fact that when you talk to the person and their attitudes, because they come from a different country or a different locality,
mm-hmm.
their philosophy and their way of thinking is entirely different from ours. In other words, I think American.
Mm-hmm.
When the war came, I joined the service.
Mm. You volunteered?
Well, more or less semi-volunteered. You've got to understand. We organized what we call a state guard,
mm-hmm.
or national defense, civil civil defense, as you want to call it today.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In order to go into the armory
mm-hmm.
and attend the classes and I volunteered my service as a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, you're more valuable to the State Guard as a whole than to just the local chapter that we were organizing within ourselves. But in order to get into the State Guard building, I had to wear a uniform.
Oh.
Now, local people, when you join the State Guard thing, you don't necessarily have to wear a uniform. In fact, there was no uniforms to be had at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a national organization, you're a local organization.
So why do you have to, why did you have to?
Well, because the Armory was a state organization. The Armory we used for training and being prepared was a state organization. Well, the state organization, the minute you walked into a state organization today, you walk into a certain national security. If you can't identify yourself or you don't have a badge, everybody has an identification badge, and if you don't have those things, they wouldn't let you in. In other words, you'd have to go through the same routine every time.
Mm-hmm.
Show your identification, prove it, unless the man got to know you. But things were changing so fast. You see a man today and tomorrow he's gone because he was drafted in the Army.
Oh, I see. What was your role during the war?
Well, I was served in the Dental Corps, the Medical Corps. Now you're talking about the United States Army.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I served in the Medical Corps.
From which year to which year?
3 years.
Three and a half years.
Yeah. So I was in there from about the late 40, early 42 to 47, I think, or approximately in there someplace.
Okay. Yeah. The period we're interested in is mostly before the war. Okay, so I presume you got interested in dentistry because your father was
yes.
a dental technician.
Yes.
He must have been one of the first Chinese
yes.
dental technicians.
Yes.
How did he get interested in it?
Well, he had a doctor friend.
Alfred Blake, right?
Yes.
Yes, who...
You haven't known, or is it from our records?
No, it was from the other
yes.
tape, yes.
That's where my name came from.
Right. And... Doc, how did he, what was he doing before?
That I don't know.
Okay. And he seemed to have done quite well, right?
I would say so. At least when you can raise children of your own and eventually put them through school, like,
mm-hmm.
A man's got to be fairly.
Did he work in his own lab? Or
yes.
I see. How long did he work until before he retired?
Well, he didn't exactly retire, because after I graduated, he worked, my brother was also a dentist,
uh-huh.
and he worked for both of us, shared the time between both offices with the two brothers.
I see.
But.
After you graduated from SC, did you start, you started practicing, I think, around 33, right?
Yes, right.
As an associate, or as
well, you'd have to call it associate because you actually didn't have anybody else. Now you got to remember that at that time, now we're talking about around 32, 33, the Oriental people were not allowed. Well, they were allowed, but how would an Oriental people go down to American part of town and explain what he wanted or what he wanted done unless the doctor had an interpreter or a
mm-hmm.
translator? Which I have experienced quite a bit because I've worked an awful lot with Mexican people
mm-hmm.
since my graduation.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I took over the Methodist Church Clinic in 1934.
Oh, what kind of clinic was
it? Well, it was just open to the public. In other words, the poor people would go to the church and ask for help,
mm-hmm.
and the church would accept them and take them. We charged them 50 cents for every appointment. But we did everything. In other words, we did extractions, we did cleanings, and did some fillings.
No major work like root canals or?
Well, we didn't have that time.
Oh.
I gave him 3 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's on a
Wednesday
volunteer.
Morning.
Volunteered.
And
there,
you gave them
no
the
pay.
Material?
Well, the church supplied the materials. We supplied the service. But
I
did supply my office. Because the church eventually ran out of space for office space, so we donated our space. So every Wednesday morning, I turned my office into a clinic
mm-hmm.
for the poor.
After, when you started practicing, were your patients all Chinese?
Mostly.
Mm-hmm.
I had some Mexican and a few other ethnic groups. Because where we're located, I was located in the Plaza area of Los Angeles.
Plaza?
Yes. All right. That's the founding part of Los Angeles. In fact, Loyola College used to be up that way.
Could you give me the street?
All right, location? Los Angeles and Sunset.
Oh, I see. Yeah. And how long was your office there, roughly?
I was there till the war called me, till I ended the service.
I see. So it was about from 33 to
about 12, 40, 13 years.
45, yeah. Okay. And how did you get your patients? Did you put up an ad, or
no.
did it, was it by word of mouth?
By word of mouth.
And you said you were an associate, or?
Never was an associate.
You never were an associate, excuse me, okay. And after you started your practice, did you have any difficulties whatsoever in terms of, either, for instance, getting enough patients, or were there always lots of patients? Because Chinese don't seem to care too much.
That's right.
About their taste.
But they
hygiene.
Do have trouble too. Well, you're talking
yeah,
about hygiene, yes. Now, one of the greatest troubles that we had with Oriental patients, their most common cause, or at least a common cause, was gum troubles. In other words, as you see the advertisement today, they're talking about see your dentist regularly. In fact, going back a little bit, dentistry was not popular before World War II. It was in World War II that we surveyed the soldiers as a whole. If you can call dental problems a disease, we found that 95% or better, 95% or better had dental problems. So dentistry boomed right after World War II because we had so many people that had poor teeth or had to lose their teeth and they had supplied.
The Army conducted the survey?
Well, you can. In each dental unit, or each unit, like I ended up, instead of in a hospital, I ended up with a traveling unit. In other words, a combat unit.
Mm-hmm.
So, in all these combat units, every time you have problems that you think you couldn't handle on the field, mm-hmm. in other words, within a small confine when you had a... You've never seen that. The dental machine in the Army was like a sewing machine at home. You had to pedal it with your feet.
Ah, yeah. They still use their feet.
They use their feet, but you use electrorheostat. You press it on and you press it off.
Uh-huh.
But then in those days you had to use it.
A pump with your feet.
In other words,
and the drill.
No, the drill, you had something but to pump it. If you could stand and pump it and use the drill at the same time, it was fine. But in the Army, we usually had an assistant who would, it's all he did was pump the machine while you used the drill.
Oh.
And you can imagine how much speed you can get. You couldn't get the speed at all that we have today. Today we have air turbines in which you use.
I see. It was stand-up dentistry at that time.
Pardon?
Was it stand-up dentistry?
Well, yeah, stand-up dentistry as you know it. Or I would say this, since you talk about you come from the old country, that's all they had back there.
Yeah, well...
They had little street chairs in which people would have their teeth pulled out. You know, I don't know whether you ever saw it. See, again,
no.
Don't misunderstand, but you're so young and compared to my age that things I'm talking about, you can't imagine, you can't understand, you can't quite visualize that yet, see?
Oh, I see. Well, I don't remember. I went to a dentist in China, but it was in a hospital. And
well, all right,
that.
Again, yeah.
Were there any Chinese dentists at the time in Los Angeles at the time you were practicing?
Well, there's one or two that had practiced, but most of those had learned their work by apprenticeship.
Oh, really? Can you practice without a...
No, not now. But
at that time,
the laws, people were not as educated and we were not as far advanced as we are today.
Oh, I see. You didn't have to go to Was it the still the SE program was the same as today, i.e. 4 years after you get your BA?
Yes.
Oh, I see. And so those people, they could practice after they feel they learned enough from
another
dentist. Well,
you couldn't exactly practice because you still have to take a state license.
Oh.
Board to pass.
I see. But you didn't necessarily have to have.
Well, no, you asked me about those that were practicing in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. other than myself.
Right.
I don't want you to get confused that I did that
thing.
Because
I
have my license and I have my state license and everything else.
Mm-hmm. So the other Chinese, they were apprentices.
Well, I would say they were apprentices. That's where they learned their trade.
Uh-huh. I see.
Or profession, if whatever you want to call it.
So there were very few,
very
in
few.
Those days. In those days, dentistry or being a dentist was not a high status job.
Well, it's always been.
Today?
Well, no. Well, I don't think it's a high status, even in the United States here. Dentistry has never become as high on a high plane as it is now since World War II. Again, getting back to World War II,
uh-huh.
as far as I'm concerned, our whole life and our whole professional attitude and the attitude people take toward dentistry has all changed since World War II.
What was it like before World War II? I know people didn't take care of their teeth, but what was their attitude toward dentists? You consider you're a dentist?
Well, it's almost like back in China. When you got baby teeth, well, you're going to lose them. Why fix them?
So people...
Today, everybody wants beautiful, straight teeth. We check on you by your smile. In fact, yourself, you have a beautiful smile. But at those times, as long as you had teeth in your head and you could eat,
yeah.
that was the main asset in life. It's
right.
not physical or facial beauty anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today, you can't even see a TV show that anybody smiles that doesn't have a beautiful set of teeth.
Mm-hmm. Or dentures.
Well, I know, but I'm just talking about it. You see, you're talking about modern times. You've never seen a cowboy get knocked down and lose his teeth, or very seldom have without teeth. And Gabby Hayes, one of our most famous character actors, the only time he took out his teeth is when he, what you call it, when he did a movie. He didn't want to be the old man or blah, 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 like
uh-huh.
that.
Who was this?
Gabby Hayes.
Oh.
Well, see, well, that's why I say, I don't mind your interviewing him and asking questions, but you and I are so far apart, my dear girl.
That's why we have to interview you.
Well, I know,
we
because
know
you don't know these
about
things.
The past.
And we're trying to tell you these things, so when it's like you're out of another world when I answer your questions.
What
you.
I'm trying to do is get a feel of what, how people looked at dentists, you know, as a, in
well,
other words, do they look upon them as equal to engineers or something
oh, yes.
like that?
Well, it's like everything else. Even in China, and as far back as you go, wasn't always the medical doctor is considered a little better than the average man on the street?
Yes.
Whether it's in China, whether it's here, or they practice herbs or anything else. When your folks, when you got sick at home, they looked to a doctor, well, maybe you're born at a later stage in life. But whenever a person got sick, they always look for a doctor. You look for somebody who knows how to help you.
Mm-hmm. Did your income level, how did it compare with, say, another professional, with, say, an engineer? Was it considerably higher?
Lower.
Lower than an engineer?
Yes. Well, no, let me explain to you. You must remember, I didn't practice amongst the white people. I practiced amongst the ethnic people and our own Chinese.
By choice or?
By necessity.
The white people would not.
Well, there was that discrimination yet. In my days, when I was born, even today, there's still discrimination.
Yes, I understand.
You can't deny that.
Mm-hmm.
I laughed at you a while ago. Nobody's ever said to accuse you of being American when you first walk up to meet them. They may, because of intelligence, they say, are you a native? I asked you the same question.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't suspect you of being born in China because your English and your language speaking, your inflection of your voice, your expressions are too American, too much like our own kids, native kids over here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I came here over here quite some time ago. I see. And so you did not choose dentistry because it was a high income field.
I chose it because that was the most likely field that I was able to get into and make a living.
Was it easy to get into dental school?
Well, It wasn't easy to get into dental school that easy.
As hard as today?
I would say more or less. But even, all right, you're taping these things, so I'm going to tell you, talk to Franklin. But when you get into a medical school, you get into a dental school, or you get into any school, if you have a parent who is a graduate of that school, you'll find your entrance to that school is much easier than if you don't know anybody in that institution. The world over is that way. If you know somebody, things are a lot easier.
Did you know somebody in the SC?
No.
I see. Do you consider yourself successful in your work?
To a certain extent, yes. I measure success, and it may be different than some of the other fellows, but I would measure my success from the way I've raised a family and we've been able to educate your own children. In other words, would you say your dad is successful? He was able